Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 71st Venice Film Festival, joined by filmmaker Joshua Oppenheimer, who is presenting his latest work, The Look of Silence, here. Thanks a lot for joining us. To start off, did you always think you would revisit the theme of the Indonesian communist purges from the point of view of the victims?
I always knew that this story had to be told. In fact, it's the story that I first went to Indonesia in a way to tell, just what it's like for the survivors to have to build a life in the haunted silence, in the space haunted, in the rubble, in the aftermath of the genocide, and in this terrible space haunted by the still powerful perpetrators. What does it mean for survivors not even to be able to publicly grieve or mourn their loss, and instead have to live in this silence? Only when I began that process, the army stopped us from shooting back in 2003. The survivors then suggested I film the perpetrators and then suggested I continue. With the perpetrators, I found the way of exposing, in a way, a national lie, the way a whole country has been built on the basis of terror and lies, and what that means for Indonesia, but also for all of us as human beings. But then I was determined always to go back and show what is it like for survivors to have to live in the aftermath of atrocity when there's complete impunity. I learned that no perpetrator will... We all do things that are wrong, and we all tell stories to justify our actions to ourselves. That's something we see in the act of killing. But no, I learned that no perpetrator will admit what they've done is wrong unless they're forced to. And by that, there has to be real political and social change. Perpetrators, there was a truth and reconciliation commission in South Africa because the apartheid regime fell. Here, the perpetrators are still in power. So the perpetrators will not admit what they've done was wrong, first because they're afraid of revenge, they're afraid of losing power, and also they're afraid of their own guilt. They're afraid of having to live with themselves, knowing that they're mass murderers. But you cannot have healing, and you cannot have truth or reconciliation until the perpetrators acknowledge what they've done is wrong, which is precisely why Adi's process, while being an inspiration for all of us, inevitably fails and ends in disappointment, because you cannot have a one-person truth and reconciliation process. You need somehow a collective political process. I also learned making this film that we must not come away from atrocity and cling to optimism, cling to the notion that look away from atrocity by telling ourselves that justice will prevail when we have really no evidence that it will. We have to stop and honor the dead and look at this, listen to the silence that follows in the aftermath of mass murder and acknowledge the lives that have been destroyed, the dead that can never be wakened, the brokenness that can never be made whole again, and stop and look backwards in memoriam to what we as human beings destroy when we commit political violence.
Were there more risks in making this film this time around?
Yeah, making this film was in fact much more frightening than making The Act of Killing, actually. The Act of Killing was emotionally frightening. It was incredibly painful. It was very hard. It led to nightmares and insomnia and was difficult. But this film, we were really fearing for our safety. We would shoot these scenes, these confrontation scenes with the powerful perpetrators, with only my Danish crew, no Indonesian crew, with mobile phones that had all the data erased from it in our pockets so that no one would be able to find our friends or track down our Indonesian crew. Adi would go with no ID. We would go with two cars so that it'd be easier to make a getaway and not be followed. If we had to run away with our bags packed, we were afraid making this film.
Do you think that the Western world has some responsibilities in this whole affair?
Absolutely. 50 years is too long for us as Western countries not to acknowledge our collective responsibility for these atrocities and our collective responsibility for lying about these atrocities for half a century. If we want to have ethical relationships with Indonesia going forward, we have to acknowledge our role in these crimes. We have to fully declassify the details of how we helped commit these crimes. We know that we provided weapons and lists of names of people to be killed. The American government gave lists of thousands of people's names to the Indonesian army, saying, tick off these names when you've killed them and give the list back to us, death lists. We know that, but so much we don't know. Most of the documents are declassified, and it's very important that the U.S. government, the British government, the Australian government, the Japanese government, the Dutch government, possibly even the Italian government, I don't know, declassify whatever information exists about what we did and apologize for it, acknowledge it, and say categorically, this was wrong, we helped participate in mass murder.
Now that you have found out so much more about Indonesia, will it be hard for you to move on to something else?
Yeah, I actually think that there's so much more I'm curious about. What moves me as a filmmaker is film is my way of exploring those aspects of our reality that are most mysterious to me, most powerful to me, and I'm looking forward, actually, to moving on to other things and exploring other things that fascinate me and surprise me and amaze me.
Anything in mind?
I have many things. One thing I'm exploring is, I feel like with the act of killing, I've just identified and started to explore what for me is the state of nature of nonfiction film. When you point a camera at anybody, they immediately start performing, and they make visible in that moment how the stories by which they want to be, by which they know themselves, they make the stories by which they live with themselves, how they want to be seen, and how they really see themselves. And it's in a way, in that sense, the nonfiction film camera is a prism which makes visible all the fictions that constitute our factual reality. That's the state of nature of nonfiction film, and it's a pity to me that most nonfiction filmmakers, or very many, will hide that fact that their characters are performing, and instead try to work with them to simulate a reality in which they pretend the camera's not present. That's an enormous missed opportunity. I feel I've only just scratched the surface of this, and I'm very excited to take this into other contexts. Where exactly, I have many ideas, but it depends on the characters and a research process which I'm just beginning now.
Thanks very much for joining us, Joshua. This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.